Coca, and I cordially welcome you to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, voice, and now I sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website, www.irenekurke.de. I will put this into the show notes for you. And if you're even more interested in all my doings, please subscribe to my monthly newsletter. In this podcast, I talk with you around topics all around contemporary music. And most importantly, I share with you insider knowledge behind the scenes, and I bring you the human beings out of our world, out of this new music world, closer. I'm very excited and proud that I'm collaborating with NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, which is one of the biggest German music papers, or even in the German-speaking area. And yeah, I'm excited that you're all listening to me here, that you're following me, that you're coming to my concerts, that you get in touch with me, because I make this experience that people who really come through the podcast, that means you already have listened to this podcast. You not just read about it, but if you listen to it, and maybe listen to it even more than one episode, my experience is if those people contact me, there usually happen amazing things because we're kind of on the same wavelength. So I'm excited about that. I'm also excited. Since March, I have a new job. I'm now a radio host or radio DJ for KAUS Radio Summit based in California. It's 92.5. There's a show every fourth Saturday in a month that I'm curating, presenting, and I show you there a lot of great music or some of my favorite music or music I find exciting. So please check it out. Because here in this format, at least in Germany, I'm not allowed to play music. But on KAUS Radio Summit, I play music for you. In this episode, I have two people for you. I have Eva Zöllner for you, who is an amazing accordion player. And she's also, well, so good in so many other things. And I think she also did a great podcast for you. I think she's also a natural talent on that. And she took part in my open call, and she is one of the people and proposers I have selected. And she's now gonna talk with the composer and performer Kara Stacey, who lives in South Africa, Johannesburg, and they talk about the music scene there. And I also find this really, really exciting. So please enjoy the interview with Eva Zöllner and Kara Stacey.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Neue Musik Leben. My name is Eva Zöllner. I'm a new music accordionist and producer based in Germany. In my work as a performer and curator, I'm particularly interested in contemporary music practices outside of Europe. There are parts in the world with incredibly diverse and interesting new music scenes, which we know very little about in our Central European bubble. So today, I want to talk a bit about South Africa, a country I've recently visited for the first time. I was very inspired by the people I met there and the diversity of the music I got to play. That's why I invited a friend and colleague from South Africa today to tell us a bit more about the country, the local new music scene, and also about her own artistic practice. I'm very happy to welcome Kara Stacey, who joins me from Johannesburg while I sit in my little studio in Montabaur im Westerwald. Hello, Kara.
Hi, thank you so much. Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks for joining me today. Kara, you're a performer, composer, and ethnomusicologist. I believe from what I've seen in your work, these three fields are equally important for you. And that's something I find very interesting in the combination. As far as I know, you started off playing piano. You also studied traditional African instruments, which I'm curious to hear more about later. But first, can you let us know a bit about your musical training and also about how, when, and why you got hooked up with experimental and contemporary music on that way.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, I'm South African. I grew up partially in Johannesburg, the main city in, well, one of the main cities in South Africa, and then partially in Eswatini, which is a very small kingdom that is between South Africa and Mozambique. And so I had lessons as a child. There was a nice orchestral educational program here in Johannesburg. I was quite a horrible clarinetist, very excited to move to Swaziland where there was no, or Eswatini as it's now called, there were no clarinet teachers. So I could abandon my first instrument and become a pianist, which is what I was hoping for. And I ended up coming back. You know, Eswatini is a really small, very small country. You can't study music there at a university level. So I came back to South Africa. I went to the University of Cape Town, and they have a, you know, very substantial music department there, the South African College of Music. And I went to study there. Classical piano is like a primary instrument, but because I was really interested in African music, I kind of started out in the composition stream and then moved across to musicology, where I could do the practical courses, but also learn how to play some Southern African traditional instruments and make music in that way as well. So that's kind of how I got into the ethnomusicology part of my career. Mm. I studied in the UK as well. I did a master's at Edinburgh and one at SOAS, University of London. And then I did my PhD afterwards looking at a kind of traditional instrument, a musical bow, like a berimbau, that you get in Eswatini. So I kind of went back to my home place to look at the kind of the traditional African music that was happening there. And all of that was quite conventional ethnomusicology, I think. I was in doing that PhD work, I was really interested in how people were playing that instrument and how they were kind of innovating, considering there were very few people who still played that instrument. So it was kind of what was the narrative around innovation and also composition. Because often when it comes to African music, there's this idea that there's a kind of traditional body of music rather than particular composers or innovators, you know, as we would think about urban musicians of different kinds, you know, innovative in their own right. We often don't have, or historically, we didn't have this kind of narrative in ethnomusicology. It was all just about kind of representing the tradition as much as possible. This is a very simplistic explanation, but basically that's what I was finding. And so I was just really, even, you know, just as a composer, I was just really interested in how people were working out what was deemed good or not, or, you know, what were the interesting, innovative compositions in that musical space. As a white person, as a white South African who plays these traditional instruments, I guess I never felt, obviously, that I was going to play traditional repertoire, apart from during my PhD, where I was really learning the tradition from various teachers in Swaziland. But as a white person, I kind of gravitated towards playing a little bit more experimental music, thinking that, you know, I don't represent those traditions. You know, I'm not part of those group language groups. And, I've collaborated with a lot of people who really do represent that heritage, but that's not me. So I guess I found my way into trying to play these instruments in other contexts, and that ended up being more experimental music, as well as also composing more, composing and playing new compositions for the instruments, people writing music for me, essentially in contemporary contexts. And that's kind of how that happened. It also also living in London for a few years really helped, because there was a lot of free improv happening there, and kind of became really interested in that. So it has been a kind of mixed bag, lots of different paths. They all, I think, all come together. but yeah, they're all kind of related to, firstly, what does it mean to be African musically? What does it mean to be a white South African musically now, these days? What does it mean to really care about these traditional African instruments, but really enjoy them in their traditional context, but also really want to hear them in other interesting artistic spaces?
Great. I think that's very interesting. Like, you were digging into the traditional and end up in the contemporary practice. That's a very rare and also inspiring combination. I think you studied those African instruments with indigenous players. Yeah. And I'd like to know if there's something you learned from them besides playing those instruments, something about music in general that helps you when you perform or compose new music.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of my musicianship, I think I owe obviously to my classical piano teachers and lecturers, and but when it came to actually composing music, I think, and making music in different ways, my primary teacher when I was much younger was Dizu Plaikis, who's just retired, but he was at the University of Cape Town. He plays many different instruments, does amazing arrangements, lots of composing. I think the freedom that came with just not being a part of that classical lineage, the way that it was taught to me, I got that from these other instruments. I think also, so that's one part of it. The other part is because I play these musical bows, like the berimbau, as I said before, they are spectral instruments. They're very quiet, most of them. You have to really listen really carefully to the harmonics. You're kind of manipulating the harmonics. So in terms of my actual listening and how I thought about form and structure, a lot was changed from playing these instruments. And then also, I mean, I think there are a lot of people I know, a lot of the more interesting musicians I know in South Africa are people who felt some kind of discomfort with the way classical music operates here. And so people, you know, most of those people moved into other kinds of genres, moving, you know, electronic music, improvised music, as well as newly composed music, like that crosses over a few different genres, is scored essentially, might involve quite a lot of improvisation as well, but is scored, is for kind of interesting combinations of instruments, including African instruments, is to be played maybe not always in kind of formal venues, but in bars and, you know, other kinds of places. So there are a few people around me who definitely felt that kind of dissatisfaction or just like an interest in what else this music could do or how else we could define the way we wanted to make music. But in terms of the actual African instruments and the teachers, I should also mention my teachers in Swaziland, Mkulu Bemani Magagula, who's passed away now, and my other primary teacher was Gogo Kokiwe Mpila. She's still around. But also that they were, you know, in the case of the Swazi artists, they're real individuals. They don't have much of a community to get feedback from. So they've really worked out what they like in terms of how a composition should sound, how the instrument should sound, what kinds of tunings they use, what kinds of structures, what kind of lyrics. And so it gives you a little bit more confidence in thinking about other things. How am I comfortable with this instrument? Like, what kinds of music do I want to make? How does this piece feel to me? And not necessarily rely on you know, formula or ways that things have been done in the past, unless, you know, if it didn't feel right.
Yeah, right. It's probably also a different kind of commitment to the music in this more traditional environment, which we can learn from as academic musicians, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Maybe we can put some links in the show notes for recording of the traditional music of your instruments, because maybe
definitely
most of our listeners are not so familiar with it. That would be great. So do you take references to traditional African music also when you write for other instruments? I mean, you write also for chamber music groups of classical instruments. How would you refer to the African music in a context like that? Does that play a role?
It does. I mean, I think my influences are, you know, kind of all around, all different kinds of experimental musics from different parts of the world, different kinds of folk musics from different parts of the world. But, you know, when I'm writing scored music for the instruments I play, that takes on certain kinds of structures. I spend quite a bit of time trying to break out of those structures sometimes, because like anything, it's what fits really well for the instrument, but then trying not to be limited by that. But I think from playing those instruments and just, you know, studying other kinds of African musics around the rest of the continent, an interest in like texture and interaction and different ways of actually musicking on stage, you know, different ways of participating. Those things are kind of inspiring. I think those come through in the stuff that I've written. I often feel like in terms of going back to more conventional ways of studying composition, I've broken a lot of rules, and I probably don't know a lot of rules. So I kind of sometimes I go through phases where I kind of rein myself back in and then try to formalize things and cover any gaps that may have come up. But I like the feeling that also that composing isn't this really elite space that people can't participate in unless they've achieved a certain thing, you know, that exists in certain genres and musical styles and not in others. And so I kind of try to keep that open as well. I try not to be too judgmental with myself, but I mean, I listen to tons of music. I listen to a lot of West African music, a lot of Congolese music in particular, like Golden Age, 60s, 70s records. And a lot of the lyric writing, and the sentiment, a lot of the harmonies, a lot of the textures, I just find really beautiful. And so, yeah, sometimes I'm really consciously trying to think about those and put that into work. And other times it's more kind of feeling.
Okay. So quite a few contemporary composers in South Africa today refer to the cultural heritage of the country, not only references to traditional music, but also other fields of arts, history, philosophy. Can you give us one or two examples of colleagues that you find particularly interesting in that context?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there was an important time, I guess, in the 80s, like mid to late 80s, early 90s, where a lot of notable South African composers, like Kevin Volans, for instance, were citing traditional all different kinds of traditional musics. And in some cases, those citations were a little bit superficial. There's been a lot of critique and discussion. For me, this is a very old example, but Hunting Gathering, the string quartet by Kevin Volans, it's really old. His work has moved on. He does a lot of other stuff, you know, stylistically now, and has done, you know, for a long time. But I think because I'm interested in how Indigenous instruments are cited and how they're evoked in other formats, for me, I hold that piece up as like super, super important for me. It was a pivotal moment. I even remember where I was when I first heard it.
And, oh, wow. I guess also by the time he wrote it, it was different times. It was also a statement.
Definitely. And I mean, I think I don't know too much about it, but I think he has, you know, he's had a long career of lots of different kinds of aesthetic interests. But that definitely, that work especially is like very special to me. And then there are other colleagues, you know, from my generation who I find really inspiring, like Matthijs van Dijk, who's we played in a chamber ensemble of new music together. He's not afraid of any kind of he's not scared of an adventure, so he's recently written a piece which was a kind of jointly composed concerto for the Xhosa Uhadi musical bow plus Mkhube, which is this little mouth bow that I play as well, with Dizu Plaikis, who was my primary teacher. The two of them have kind of written this concerto for a kind of chamber ensemble. And I think it's a double concerto. I think there's a violin. I was actually at the premiere, so I should remember, but there's a violin part as well. And that's really beautiful. But then he'll have other kind of, you know, electronic dance music references, and, you know, he's kind of jumping around a lot. And I find that very inspiring. And then this is a little incestuous because it's all my close friends and people who've been in my life, but Galina Juritz is another important South African composer, but who's based in London at the moment. And she's moved more into electronic music, but her work is really inspiring. And it also plays around with different kinds of media references. It's not bound to any kind of acoustical, either in terms of conventional classical instruments or African instruments. It's not bound in that way. But also really interesting. And so even the question of whether people feel they must cite their heritage in one way or another, or can be free of that, I think especially now, as you know, because you've played a whole lot of contemporary South African accordion works that have just been written, but there's a younger generation of really interesting composers who are just playing around with all the options available to them, which is really nice.
Yeah. Sure, and there's endless possibilities to connect to to the heritage and even to the the tradition of music, like even like the spectralism, like if you look at Andy Lippmann's work, is very clearly coming from what you just told us about the overtones of the traditional instruments, for example. It's super interesting. Thank you. On a practical level, how does the new music scene in South Africa work? I believe most things happen in an academic context somehow, or?
Yeah, it is. It does seem to be the way. I think historically it's been that way as well. It's like that in other parts of the world, but it's quite a dry environment in terms of funding. We have quite a lot of Swiss funding, which is fantastic. We have the Goethe Institute, which is also fantastic, supports a lot of music. We probably had more opportunities before COVID, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so things are a little bit more sparse and difficult now. A lot of places closed down. There's some governmental funding as well. It doesn't always go into kind of new music contexts. It will go into kind of pop spaces or into African music spaces as well, because that's seen from a government perspective as really important, which is good. So there are a couple of organizations but essentially because of that lack of funding, it does make it really difficult for composers to be independent unless they are also playing. Matthijs van Dijk, the composer I mentioned before, you know, he does a lot of playing himself. He does a lot of arranging for other kinds of events and, you know, other orchestras and around the country. And so there are a couple of independent composers. And I guess there is, you know, if I think about kind of younger composers like Njabulo Phungula, who's a composer who didn't actually make it to our meeting that we had last year, but a fantastic composer based in Durban. He's getting really, you know, quite a lot of international commissions. So there is an interest in Southern African new music, which is great. But either we have composers who are attached to academic institutions or who are doing doctoral studies or, you know, maybe overseas doing PhDs, masters and PhD in composition in different places in order to make that career possible. It's a bit of a kind of hustler environment. You need to be entrepreneurial. You need to be able to be teaching in different ways, maybe teaching instrumental lessons.
Totally.
So in some ways it's more difficult than other parts of the world because there really isn't enough funding. Yeah. But in other ways, I think there's a resilience that comes from that. And because it's a very vibrant society, we have interesting, you know, the works are interesting that are being written.
Definitely. We'll talk about that later. It seemed to me like there's a lot more funding for visual arts, contemporary visual arts in South Africa. So there seems to be an interest for like expressions, artistic expressions in contemporary ways.
Yeah.
So
I think that might also be, I mean, we have a lot of galleries, you know, and they've, I off the top of my head, I'd say it seems like they've been less affected by COVID. Yeah. Also that, there's a very strong tradition of kind of visual, very cutting edge, like visual artwork, especially around Johannesburg. There's a lot of theater and dance work. And so that's also where a lot of musicians, composers get work, but also musicians get work. And another important institution is the William Kentridge, a very prominent South African artist, his Center for the Less Good Idea, which is
a great name.
it's a very important space. It brings together, it puts on kind of different kinds of concerts and theatrical and dance shows, but also it brings together, it has these kind of seasons where they bring together different kinds of artists according to a certain theme. And you kind of generate work together in a very collaborative, it's a very intensive collaborative way of working. And then everything gets kind of premiered at the end. And they have one or two seasons per year. I think it might be one per year. And when you go to that, you really know you're going to see some super interesting work. But that isn't the space necessarily for people to stick in their conventional artistic roles. I was part of a season and it, you know, you end up doing a lot of kind of things that you're not really comfortable doing. That the whole point is that you're kind of out of your comfort zone. So it's I'm always very impressed by the stuff that comes out of there. It's really interesting and amazing and attracts a lot of artists. It's not always very, there are not always a lot of opportunities for composers in that space, unless they also play instruments as well. But that's another important space.
Your role as a composer who's also a performer and works in different kind of contexts musically, but also in between the arts, probably makes it easier for you to survive than for other people who just compose.
Definitely. And if I think about young composers, like younger than me, I mean, they all have these really diverse working lives. So it's kind of, I guess, a requirement here to survive. Yeah.
Right. After the end of the apartheid in the 1990s, 2000s, South African society went through a big change, apparently. How did that affect the contemporary music scene and also the music itself?
That's a great question, and I'm probably a little bit young to answer it, but I'll do my best. So it was 1994. Those were the first democratic elections. I was
you
9 years
seven,
old.
You were 7 years old.
I was nine. Yeah, yeah. I was nine. So I think that kind of pre-transition period where a lot of white composers were really making a political statement by integrating African musical styles of different kinds into their music, that was a really kind of important moment. I think after 1994, everything has changed so quickly. And we're at a point now, so decade after decade, there was an incredible amount of optimism in the 90s in South Africa, and then quite a few disappointments politically in terms of actual transformation in the country. We're still a really, really unequal society. And so there's a lot of disillusionment now. And I think this kind of, there's a knock-on effect for composers as well, because, you know, anything that's seen as like extremely removed or kind of in some kind of ivory tower, you know, it's hard to, you have to kind of continually argue for the relevance of the things that you do, considering the challenges that we have in our country. So like a lot of theatrical work and dance work is really, really political, as it needs to be, because we're living with these really harsh circumstances. And so I think composers have either engaged with that subsequently or have not. I guess probably some more conventional composers may feel, you know, I'm not counting myself as that because I've kind of had this winding path, but I feel like quite a few, you know, classical composers in the strict sense have probably had to make some decisions about how they work. And we have had, I mean, big operas that are about these really important struggle heroes, you know, that those kind of big commissions have all been along, or mostly been along these really political lines. And so I guess probably as we are quite a divided society, you know, even just in terms of heritage and in terms of race, the legacy of apartheid is still there. We're extremely divided geographically in all kinds of ways. And so I think probably everyone is grappling in their own way with how to make sense of them being part of this society here, this project. The idea of the Rainbow Nation, which is kind of this 90s positive moment, that's been really deconstructed. Mm. So I think especially if you're a white composer. It was a lovely idea. It was really lovely. Was it realistic? It's a complete ideal. It was incredibly important in that moment, for certain. And I guess the kind of racial politics have changed a lot. So even in my career, to become really interested in African music, my mother is an academic, and she's, you know, worked in African languages. It was a political statement for a white person to actually take these things really seriously, like, you know, put your name down and do it. And then core white soon afterwards, it was like, oh, cultural appropriation, why are you doing that? You know, so these things kind of changed quite quickly. And I think because of that, people have to be quite honest about what they're doing and why they're doing it, and carve out a space for themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm seeing with like younger composers, just really a huge, and the older generation, more established composers, like this a real diversity of work as people grapple with all of these tricky things.
Yeah. The diversity was something that struck me when I came to South Africa. It was my first visit to the country. And Maybe we can talk a little bit about the project we met in last year, because that was, as I said, my first visit to South Africa, and it was with young composers. I was an artist in residence at the Sterkfontein Composers Meeting near Johannesburg, which is a great initiative started by composer Michael Blake, I think, in 2012. It's been running for a couple of years already. And the meeting connects young composers and professional musicians, and they work together and create new works together. So I spent 2 weeks with this group at a beautiful place called Nyrox Foundation near Johannesburg. It's a sculpture park and a residency, and it was in the middle of this amazing nature. I could hear the lions roar. it was a great place, and we spent these days together there, and we worked on new pieces. And it was a group of 8 young composers from different parts of South Africa who were all born somehow in the end of the 80s or the beginning of the 90s. So that means they are somehow the first generation growing up in post-apartheid South Africa. And for me, it was a very special encounter somehow, even though I'm really used to work with young composers all over the world. But I felt South Africa was really special and intense. I had the feeling that there was a very special energy among these people. They had very unique and individual approaches to their music, but also to their role as an artist in the society. So yourself being part of that group of composers and also that generation, how was your perception of this generation of artists around you in South African society today?
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time. We have composers who are slightly older than us, in some cases not much older than me, like Andile Khumalo, like Bongani Dodana Breen, who are, you know, who are active in making really amazing music. And then, yeah, as part of the Sterkfontein Composers Meeting, it's a slightly younger generation of musicians and composers, kind of a mix. I thought this group was really nice because it was a mix of people. It was people who considered themselves quite, you know, composers, and this is the majority of the work they're doing. And then also people who, the one composer is an opera singer. He's a young student. He does a lot of arranging himself. He comes out of the kind of choral music scene in South Africa, which is also has an interesting role to play in terms of the history of classical music in South Africa a lot. Definitely, during apartheid. Yeah. So he's kind of very much coming out of that background. And so everyone had like quite different interests of this particular group. And I think that for me was quite representative of the diversity of voices that we're seeing in contemporary South African composition from this generation.
Yeah, definitely.
Something that was maybe not so well represented in that group, I think, is also the amount of jazz. You know, jazz is really, really big in South Africa. Yeah. But also there are a lot of jazz musicians who are writing scored music, who are doing more experimental work with kind of crossover with orchestral musicians, but also with dancers and in theater spaces. So that was maybe not so represented in this particular group of composers, but it was, everyone had quite a, as you said, like diverse practice. And I really love that. I also love that it wasn't only people who, you know, considered themselves really serious composers, you know, technically trained, you know, for many years, but quite a mix of people, but all interested in really taking seriously this task of creating music.
Yeah, I found it quite fascinating to see this range, like stylistic range, like starting from what you just talked about, Lesedi, who's coming from this choral background, and then in the other end of the range, like with Günther working with recordings, electroacoustic music with recordings endemic frogs, and that was the full range, and anything in between, like Bronwyn working with the songs by women in Zanzibar, and it was very diverse and at the same time very, as you say, very serious in a way. I think they were taking it so seriously, and that was what impressed me in a way. And it was also very clear that these people have something to say, and that was a really good experience for me.
And I think it's also that there's a platform like that. It's not, you know, it's hard to get funding for it. It's not an easy thing to run, as Michael Blake, who runs the whole thing and who founded it. I help him with that on the board. you know, as I'm sure he would say, like it's a difficult thing to get together in a difficult funding environment. I think he really believes that as well, like the kind of founding idea was that it would be a platform for young South African composers and let's say Southern African, because there have been other African composers who've come from other countries, to have the chance, this intensive chance to the kind of work day by day with a performer and really work on the craft, but also have the chance to work on a piece and really, you know, learn so much from a performer. I mean, I don't know, I've had, you know, other commissions where, you just don't have that luxury at all. So it is really like a lovely opportunity and you learn a lot from it. It's not easy to organize, but I think the fact that Michael Blake has also been really open to who gets to participate in it is kind of breeding a culture of, you know, everybody's welcome and you can have, we can define ourselves in different ways as music makers, but you can still have this opportunity and you can really learn from it. And you can take, you know, this kind of way of working with music is for everybody. And you can take that out into your various, you know, musical scenes where you usually work. And so I think that's a really nice quality. You don't have that at universities necessarily, depending on the program. You know, here you don't always have that. It can be quite, access can be quite, controlled in some ways. Even if it's very subtly, or, you know, people just don't feel like they would think of themselves as composers, but Michael has a very open view for this. And that's really set the tone for this recurring yearly project.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was a great experience. And I think there was a lot of really interesting music coming out of it. So if people want to know how the young South African generation sounds like, we recorded those 8 accordion pieces, including one by Kara Stacey, which is very beautiful and very special to me.
Thank you.
And we released them on Bandcamp, and we put the link for the recordings in the show notes. So Kara, I just said, I've already mentioned you're a performer, you're an improviser, you're a composer, you work in different contexts like jazz and experimental music and more classical music. And I think you're traveling to the US with a very special project soon. Do you want to tell us something about it?
Yeah. So this is, I think I should also say, because I'm an academic as well, you know, I've also had the privilege of being part of projects that are funded academically, but also allow for some really nice music making. And this is a project, it's the ensemble, it's called the Kukutana Ensemble. It came out of an academic project that was looking at Indian Ocean music and cultural ties, but in the kind of early modern period. So really many centuries ago, I think they had it as 1500 to 1700. And so this is a space where we are always told that there are not a lot of historical records that can help us work out these things. So it was a perfect spot perfect kind of an intellectual environment to work on an artistic project where we have to imagine things that may not be down in a written record. And there are lots of written records as well, but just not as extensive, maybe, depending on the angle. So this ensemble brings together Ethiopian, Indian, and South African musicians. We had a Tanzanian musician. He can't join us this time, but he was part of the original group. And we are collaborating in the US with a Palestinian musician and an Iranian musician. The idea with the whole project is that there is evidence from the Goan Inquisition in India of an Ethiopian man who was taken as a slave, as a child, from the Samian Mountains in Ethiopia. He was brought into the Middle East. He kind of grew up there, working essentially as part of a slave labor system. Ended up in India, and he had, at that point, obviously converted to Islam, and he kept getting caught by the Inquisition, essentially, and then would say that he, you know, would have converted to Christianity and then bouncing backwards and forwards. But essentially, because of the trial documentation, we have evidence of him telling his own life story. And so this project, this ensemble, we tried to take the evidence we have from that Inquisition trial material, but also look at all of the kind of historical research that we can do around the various times he was in different places, and create a kind of quite ephemeral theatrical musical performance, which evokes questions about slavery, about representation, about agency and spirituality in different ways. And so we have a residency at Yale University coming up and a performance as part of a conference around the Black Indian Ocean in the next couple of weeks. And then we go to Lafayette College, we do another performance. We have a couple of performances in the US of this particular project, but it's really stimulating. And again, it's another project where we have a lot of different kinds of musicians and we compose together in a very collaborative way. So it's interesting, challenging and interesting.
Yeah, but great. It's building bridges and that's so important these days, right?
Yeah,
and at
yeah.
the same time, it's combining research and artistic expressions, I think, in a very yeah. unique way. So I hope you too will be successful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Coming back to South Africa for a minute before we wrap up this conversation. So South Africa is a country of contrast and inequality with an extremely complicated past and a still very complicated present. At the same time, it's a fascinating country with a lot of cosmopolitan vibes and human power, I think. I can say I never visited a country, and I've visited many countries, where people were so welcoming and warm and engaged at the same time. So society has gone through a fast change in South Africa, and it will take generations probably to fix the damages caused by the apartheid regime. But I believe that arts can help to fix those damages, and some very strong artists have emerged out of the recent challenges. So I'm really happy you told us a little bit about what's going on yeah. artistically in South Africa these days. I have one last question for you, Cara. Looking into the future, what is your wish for the new music scene in South Africa? I mean, of course, there's a easy financial answer to this question,
yeah.
as everywhere in the world, and particularly in the Southern Hemisphere. But maybe there's something beyond money which you think could bring out the great potential that's growing in all these creative people and initiatives in South Africa.
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess I would say, apart from the obvious financial opportunities, I think part of it is about a kind of recognition of self for composers in South Africa. We have a diverse scene. It's challenging, but there are a lot of really exciting things happening. And in some, the challenges also create a kind of energy, which we see in the visual arts as well. We see in theater work as well. And I think we have this in composition as well. And so I kind of feel like I sometimes they're kind of territorial divisions between composers, especially in the academic space. And that kind of thing, I think, is really not very constructive. So I wish, especially for this younger generation, that we kind of can be free of those things and we can support each other, which I think we're really seeing actually with younger composers. We're really seeing, and also that it can be, you know, seen as a really inclusive space, where different kinds of musicians can contribute, but also different voices coming from, with a kind of recognition of the past that we are still grappling with. It's not the past even, it's we have it around us all the time. So internally, I would say that's the kind of thing. And I think I maybe don't even need to say it in South Africa because it's happening. It's happening already. A lot of people are collaborating. There's a lot of openness. Sometimes even in spaces where you think there'd be stylistic divisions, in terms of kind of extremely commercial popular music and then new music. And then you find that the bridges already being built there, which is really exciting. And then internationally, I mean, I think a lot of these really talented composers are getting international recognition. They are getting commissions from fantastic ensembles in other parts of the world. So I would definitely wish for more of that for all my colleagues. And but
we're working on that.
But yeah. I think the DIY aesthetic, which South African society has throughout, I think it's good for compositional energy. It's good for like a kind of artistic innovation and energy. So it's just about kind of owning that, I think.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts here with us, Cara. It made me really curious to hear more music from South Africa, not just contemporary, but any kind of music.
Yeah.
I think we put some more notes, some more links in the show notes with maybe
yeah.
some tips, listening tips or something if people want to get into it a little more. Is there anything else you want to say? Something I forgot?
No, just thank you for having me. It was lovely to chat.
Okay. Many thanks to everyone listening to us today. I look forward to your feedback. And I hope you got some new insights into the new music community, which actually stretches all around the globe. So have a lovely day, everyone. And thanks again, Kara, for joining us today.
Thank you.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.